Blog Talk Radio.
Controversy that enveloped Stetson along with everything else that's going on in the world of sports as we get ready for this run towards the NCAA tournament, March Madness, the road to the Final Four, which you'll see on CBS, TBS, TNT, and True TV starting next week. Always fun times when we are beginning to hop on the bandwagon and join the road to the Final Four. It is a big day, or a big day after for Adam Scott, who picked up his second straight win, which is so rare. You know, to win back-to-back weeks is an exceptionally rare feat, and to do it in the manner that Adam Scott has done it is really, really impressive. He has used his ball striking to his advantage. He is showing that beautiful swing and that prowess of that beautiful swing and using it to his advantage. But he's also bouncing back well from mistakes. He had the quad at the Bear Trap 15 last week on Saturday, bounced back from that, won the golf tournament. On Sunday, yesterday, at Cadillac, at Doral, he made two doubles in the front nine, battled back, survived. He hit it behind a tree on 18, the Blue Monster, the toughest hole in the golf course. Hit it behind a tree, had to hit a cut around the tree. Didn't quite cut it enough, nearly went in the water, stayed up in the top of the hazard, got a great break. Rest is history. So, needless to say, that what we are seeing out of Adam Scott is both good play and good luck, but also mental fortitude. And the non-anchored putting style is having success for him. And, you know, all down the line, he is playing like a guy who wants to be included in the big three, four, five, however many names you want to put up there. He clearly wants to make it known that he thinks and deserves he should be up there and wants to have a part of a conversation, especially as he gets towards Augusta here in a couple weeks. And the Masters, 1 month from today, April 7th on ESPN at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, where you have a situation where he won there, obviously, 2013, and feels like he can win on a golf course that fits his eye, and he'll have Steve Williams on the back, who he thinks helps him a half stroke per round. Before we get to Luke, I want to point out one other golf-related note here, which is, this was pointed out by multiple people on Twitter last night. 2012, Bubba Watson finished second at Doral, won the Masters. 2014, Bubba Watson finished second at Doral, won the Masters. 2016, Bubba Watson finished second at Doral. We shall see where this takes us come 1 month and 4 days from today. We will talk about the road to the Final Four when Teeing It Up returns after this message. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. I almost said this is the road to the Final Four. This is not the road to the Final Four. This is Teeing It Up on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, and available on archive anytime on iTunes.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found. because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
We are back on Teeing It Up. We are joined by the voice of Stetson football, joined by the voice of Stetson men's basketball, and the voice of the Daytona what?
Tortugas.
Tortugas. It is the one, the only, Mr. Luke Morrow. Hello, sir.
Good evening.
Is your heart now whole because you hadn't been on Teeing It Up for a month?
I know, exactly a month to the day, going back to the Super Bowl. It's been a long time.
And Peyton also left the Colts on this exact day 4 years ago.
Huh, that's interesting.
Something about March 7th. All right, for those who are not aware, Stetson men's basketball was in the middle of what could have been a massive controversy involving the NCAA tournament. It didn't work out that way. Florida Gulf Coast, a.k.a. Dunk City, won the conference championship game. Explain to the people out there what was the issue and why Stetson was in the middle of this massive controversy.
Well, you know, to me, first off, in my opinion, I thought it was pretty ridiculous to begin with. Stetson was ineligible for the tournament this year from the get-go, you know, before the year even started. And that dates back from 2011 up until 2014, I believe it is. And for Stetson, they were ineligible because they went through two different coaching changes during that time. A lot of guys transferred out, and Stetson was punished for it, which I think is ridiculous. If the guys are failing in the classroom, flunking off the team, that's one thing. But for guys to be transferring after their head coach changes, I think that's a different story. And for those who did stick around, which is only two players from the last coaching change, you know, they were punished for not transferring. And so a new coach and all new players had nothing to do with this. And like so many times in college sports, the wrong guys are being punished for something that occurred at a school years prior sometimes. So anyway, Stetson was ineligible to begin. And as the number 7 seed in the conference tournament, it didn't seem like it would become an issue in the championship. Every coach in the conference elected to not let Stetson play in the conference tournament, but it was the commissioner and the members of the board of the A-Sun Conference that ruled that they would let Stetson play in the conference tournament to fill out the 8 teams. And if Stetson were to win the conference tournament, the regular season champ would go to March Madness. So it brought us to a very interesting situation last night in the championship where if Stetson were to beat Florida Gulf Coast, which they nearly did, the regular season champ, North Florida, would go to the NCAAs instead of Stetson, and Florida Gulf Coast would go home. And then on the flip side, which ended up happening, if Florida Gulf Coast won, they would get to go to March Madness, which of course is now occurring, and that drops North Florida into the NIT. So a very interesting situation where UNF, I'm sure that they had to become Stetson fans last night, hoping that the Hatters could pull off another upset so that UNF could get into March Madness. But in the end, Florida Gulf Coast was able to win on their own, and I guess the discussion and the debate kind of becomes moot as we didn't have to worry about an ineligible team getting an automatic bid.
Yeah, so, you know, what else is fascinating about this, besides the off-the-court issues, is that in my personal conversations with you and in your appearances on Teeing It Up where we mentioned this, Stetson men's basketball did not get off to a very good start this year and did not get off to a very good start in conference play. So it wasn't just that there was this controversy of should they even be in the tournament to begin with. For example, UConn did not participate in the conference tournament when they were ineligible. But then a team suddenly found their groove and ran right through the tournament.
Yeah, you know, it was something. And it was a great ride to be along for. It's just the broadcaster not really having anything to do with it. But Stetson had 9 wins in the regular season. If they were eligible, they would have become the third ever team, assuming they won last night, third ever team to make March Madness with 20 or more losses. But they were 9-21 after the regular season, but they won the regular season finale against Florida Gulf Coast at home, coming back from an 18-point deficit. It snapped a 7-game losing streak against Gulf Coast, which as a program has always owned Stetson since they've come into the A-Sun. And that was a big win to end the regular season. Then they went to the conference tournament. They traveled all the way up to New Jersey, beat the second-best team in the conference in NJIT. From there, went straight to Nashville, where they upset Lipscomb, in their building. And then they went to Florida Gulf Coast, a place they haven't won in six games in a very tough environment, and nearly pulled off an upset against one of the better teams in the conference and the team that's going to represent them in March Madness. So, you know, I think a lot of people didn't think that it would become an issue to allow Stetson to play in the tournament because they were the number seven seed. And I'm sure a lot of people outside of Stetson University figured that they would get knocked off in the first round and we wouldn't have to worry about the situation that we ended up getting into last night in the Atlantic Sun. But some things finally clicked. They're a very young team, and they grew up a lot late in the season and finally started to do some of the things that I know head coach Corey Williams was preaching all year long. And so even though it was a tough end last night, it was a very promising end to the season and something to build off of moving next year, where Stetson hopes and expects to be towards the top of the conference as opposed to the bottom.
You came to Jersey for a tournament and didn't tell me.
I thought I did. I guess I didn't. But yeah, I was in New Jersey.
You did not tell me, but that's fine. I was probably doing something.
Well, I was in New York, so I didn't really want to leave the hotel to begin with.
You basically went from the hotel to the arena back to the hotel.
Pretty much.
Hey, it's the life of a broadcaster. It's the life of a golfer. Everybody always asks Tiger Woods, you know, what do you think of Shanghai or some extravagant places around the world? Tiger goes, I haven't really had a chance to explore them. I just go from the hotel to the golf course, back to the hotel to the golf course, maybe out to dinner in one place, and then I'm back. I can't walk around. I'm too famous.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about that last part. You know, I can walk around and no one's going to recognize me at least. But it's true. People always ask about you know, certain places I've been or try to suggest doing certain things while I'm at certain places. And you know, it's fun to get to see the country, and certain trips I have more downtime than others, but in the end it is a work trip, and so you don't have as much downtime. But it was a fun week. I mean, we did travel over 3,000 miles in a week span. We were in, you know, three different cities, really four, it was a fun week. But that is the life of the broadcast of a broadcaster or a professional athlete, where you move all around and get to see a lot of different places, but in a very short time.
Luke didn't text me, which is the sign that Luke's busy, because, you know, you were just down there focused. And what a lot of people don't realize about conference tournaments is that you may not know your opponent until the very last minute, and then as a broadcaster you're scrambling because you don't have your prep work laid out on a set schedule like you do for the regular season, when you know who you're going to play way, way, way back at the beginning.
And I made a big mistake this year of saving all my spotting boards for basketball on a flash drive. And then the flash drive, while connected to my laptop about 2 weeks ago, I guess I knocked it out and ejected without being properly ejected, and it cleared the entire flash drive. So after having already made boards for, say, NJIT, the turnaround will be much simpler when I find out, oh, we're playing Lipscomb now in less than 48 hours. Well, good thing I already have my board made up. I'll just have to update it. But unfortunately, I erased them all, so I had to start from scratch. So that made it a little more difficult, and it certainly is tricky. Tournaments like this, we've been in a tournament Thanksgiving week each of the past 2 years, where we've played four games in a week span. Those can get tough to get your boards ready and relearn a theme. At least in conference play, you're already familiar with the teams you have to play. As a broadcaster, you don't have to do as much homework and prep to learn about the guys. But it is tricky. I mean, going back to the end of the regular season, we played, I think it was seven games in about 19 days or something like that to close out the year. So it can get a little tricky, but maybe not as tricky as playing in those games.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's go back to the basketball for a second. Everybody talks about meaningless games. How do you get up for a meaningless game? This was a meaningless tournament. I mean, this is – everybody's playing for destiny. We saw what happened yesterday with Northern Iowa making that buzzer beater to get into the tournament. That's the dream of everybody. And as we go through championship week, we'll see this, you know, happen over and over again. You and Stetson didn't have to live that. These players knew from the get-go there is no champagne at the end of this quest of this journey. How did they get their guys motivated?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's something I'm proud of these guys. You know, knowing them personally and knowing that they never quit really all season long, because You're right. I mean, in the end, they really didn't have much to play for. If they won last night, they would have got some rings, they would have got a trophy, because they still would have won the ASUN, and they would have been the first ever team to do so. So, of course, they wanted to get their names in the record book, and it would have been nice to get some of that hardware to go home with. And you never want to lose a game, but it's much different than what Florida Gulf Coast was playing for last night. And so, you know, I respect what the Hatters have done all year, and especially that coaching staff, to get the guys to play. And they talked about it leading up to the championship that it never really settled in that they couldn't play in March Madness. You know, that was something they knew from the beginning and didn't really think much about. And then maybe because they didn't think it'd come into play, like a lot of other people, you know, it didn't settle in until these last few days leading up to the championship, when they started to realize, man, we got all the way here. Now if we were to just win Sunday, normally we get to go to March Madness. Unfortunately, that's not going to be the case. And yet they still turned in an excellent effort last night, just about good enough to win. Thought they were going to pull it off, lost by two in overtime, had a great opportunity to win. We were leading for most of that game. So, you know, my heart goes out to them just for giving it their all season long. And I know the coaching staff is incredibly proud and appreciative of that. And on top of it, no seniors on this team. I could understand if there were some seniors that are playing for the final time in their career, but all these guys are going to be back next year. It's easy to question the hunger of a team in that situation, but no matter the game, no matter the situation all season long, the effort was there, and that in its own self is pretty impressive.
Talking with the great Luke Morrow on teeing it up. I like the fact that I called you the great.
Well, I am great, so I appreciate it.
Oh, I like this swag. This is a new Luke. Got some swag.
No. Kidding, of course.
I don't know how we transition from Stetson to Peyton Manning, but we'll somehow transition from Stetson to Peyton Manning. Your thoughts on him stepping away from the game after 18 years?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. You know, thought it was the right time. There's no better time for him at this point to retire, go out on top after winning a championship, and I think it was pretty obvious from his performance this past year that it's time to wrap up his career. So a little surprised how long it took into the offseason, but that's such a tough decision to make for any of these guys. We've seen athletes like Brett Favre, obviously, and even Andy Pettit or Clemens struggle with these decisions. So a little surprised how long it took, but at the same time understand how much thought needs to go into this. But in the end, it's the right decision for Manning and the decision I was expecting this offseason.
What will be your lasting memory of Peyton Manning?
Ooh. I mean, obviously, I think remembering him as one of the best quarterbacks, certainly of his generation, put him and Brady in the top two. And one of the greatest quarterbacks, I think, of all time. And, you know, it helps that he got the Super Bowl here to go out on. But I think some people may still remember him as having the monkey on his back in the postseason, maybe not performing as well as a lot of other great quarterbacks in the playoffs, especially a guy like Tom Brady. But, you know, Manning was a phenomenal quarterback for many years, and he kind of ran out of gas here this past season, but was still able to will the team through a championship with the help of a good defense. And Osweiler obviously played a handful of games and a pretty good running game and all that sort of stuff. But to me, Manning is one of the best quarterbacks of all time and one of the smartest as well.
I agree, and for me, it's a couple things. First of all, he definitely did leave at the right time. I don't think we wanted a hang-on situation here. He got out. He was a champion. His last pass was the completed two-point conversion in the Super Bowl. He ends on a good note. Number two, it's the way he revolutionized the game. Go back to Week 17. He comes back in the game. You could see immediately he wasn't really impressive in that Week 17 game. Made a nice couple throws, but the way he made the checks of the line, he made the defense think pass, which made the run able to work, audibles, all the Omahas, etc. Just fantastic stuff. Number two, go back to that Kansas City game early in the year. You know, just marched them down the field after the stunning fumble when Kansas City was trying to run out the clock. And you could see there just the special innate talent for that two-minute drill. I thought what Tom Brady told Peter King this morning was just exceptional. He forced everybody else to work harder. And I think that that is a lesson that I think a lot of people are going to take, that if you want to play at this level in the National Football League, that's the level you have to that's the amount of work you have to put in on a continuing basis.
Absolutely. You always hear stories about him being, you know, the first guy in, the last guy out, always watching film all season long, working with other guys to make sure they got things corrected or were on the same page offensively, whether it be linemen, backup quarterbacks, receivers, whatnot. And I certainly agree with one of the points you made about him changing the game. And, you know, even just in terms of playing Madden, I always hate going up against Peyton Manning because the computer uses the entire play clock to make all the audibles and change the play and snap the football. But Peyton Manning, I think, became the first coach on the field as a quarterback, kind of running the offense on his own at the line of scrimmage, play after play, and being smart enough to read a defense pre-snap, get the right offense to beat it, and do so play after play, all from the line of scrimmage. And maybe the best at it, some guys do that to a certain extent, you know, Peyton Manning, I think, will be remembered as the best at running the offense from the line of scrimmage and running it himself.
Yeah. Now, do you think he ends up as a coach, front office, or TV, or nothing, which I think is about a 2% chance of actually happening?
I think it'll take a little while. You know, I don't expect to see him anywhere this year, whether it be on TV or whatnot. You know, I don't see him as a coach. I could see TV or front office potentially, like, you know, the guy he was just playing under in John Elway. I think he'd be well suited in TV. That's a good question. You know, I don't know if I could pick one. I'd say either TV or somewhere in a front office. I just don't, for some whatever reason, I don't see him being a coach.
We shall see. I believe that he will go to TV and be very good at TV and explain things in a way that regular human beings can recognize. I think eventually he'll become an offensive coordinator, and I think if he does that, he will go down as one of the best offensive coordinators in the history of football.
I would love to see it, and it'd be interesting to see him now call the plays up from, you know, a booth or the sideline. And as many know and realize, it can be frustrating for a coach, especially when you are a great player, because you can't go out there and do the things yourself. So, you know, we're getting way down the line here talking about if he were to ever become a head coach, that would be an interesting thing where I think Peyton Manning, his persona from us on the outside is how smart of a quarterback he is and that football IQ. And if he has guys that maybe aren't on the same level or could do the same things that Peyton Manning could do on the field, because many can't do that, how you're able to handle that. Because as a coach, it can be very frustrating when guys don't do the things you want them to do, you'd like them to do, or used to do yourself when you could actually play, and now you're kind of helpless on the sidelines.
Absolutely. We're talking to Luke Morrow. Let's run through some things here. First of all, RG3 is officially a free agent. Would you like him to be the next backup quarterback for Teddy Bridgewater?
No, absolutely not. We don't need him. I don't want him. No thanks. Go somewhere else.
I still can't believe Joe Webb is in football, and Joe Webb played in a Super Bowl.
I love it. And he's gone through like 5 different position changes over the course of his career.
He was your quarterback, your starting quarterback on a National Football League Sunday.
Yeah, up until this past year, he was the last starting quarterback for the Vikings in a playoff game. So,
think about that
didn't go well.
There are kids, little kids, who went to a game, may not have had a lot of football knowledge, or maybe just casual sports fans or football fans, who their NFL experience, their one NFL experience, is Joe Webb as a quarterback.
Yeah, and I feel bad for those kids. But, you know, that was a great example of how terrible of a coach and how stupid Brad Childress was. So he was originally drafted. Joe Webb was originally drafted to be changed into a receiver because of how good of an athlete he is. And Childress decided to switch him back to a quarterback during training camp because they thought he could be an excellent quarterback in the NFL and so on and so forth. The rest is history, and that was one of many moves to forget from the Childress era.
Seriously, where do you think RG3 ends up, if anywhere? I think he'll be a backup on a team with a stable quarterback situation, you know, just, you know, like a Giants. Not that I think the Giants will get him the backup Eli, but I think it'll be more of a that situation where somebody can develop him and figure out. I just don't think he can be a starter right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's better suited for a situation like that. You know, I have no idea where he's going to end up. You always hear the Cowboys, but it seems like the Cowboys may be more likely to draft a quarterback. It's tough to believe that Tony Romo is soon going to be 36, and the Cowboys are in a situation here where they need to start thinking about the quarterback position moving forward. Regardless, I don't think RG3 is the answer to that question. But, you know, you hear the Cowboys a lot. Chip Kelly gets thrown around, but you have the whole Kaepernick situation in San Francisco. I have no idea where RG3 is going to end up, but wherever it is, I think he should be a backup. And that's why it's kind of tough to choose, because it's easy to find the teams that have a hole in the quarterback position from a starting standpoint. I don't think RG3 can fill that hole. So he could really, hypothetically speaking, I mean, he could end up almost anywhere because you always need backup quarterbacks.
Who do you want to see the Vikings get in free agency? Is there a player that you've zoned in on and said, this is who I want desperately?
Not so much. I'd like to see them try to improve the offensive line, but it looks like they're going to try to approach that both in-house and through the draft. There's some defensive guys, especially at the safety position, that were formerly with the Bengals under head coach Mike Zimmer. It'd be nice to grab one of those two. I think Reggie Nelson of the Bengals is a free agent. So it would be nice to get another safety to play alongside Harrison Smith. That would be huge for the secondary. But for the Vikes, not many big holes that they need to fill. Offensive line, like I said, that safety, and then maybe a linebacker somewhere along the way as well. So nobody in particular in the free agent market that stands out. The Vikings haven't been a team that typically spend big in free agency other than the terrible contract that they gave to Mike Wallace after, you know, accepting that terrible contract, the trade for Mike Wallace. But I expect them to play pretty close to the vest, rely on the draft, and maybe some veterans that they'll sign late in the process and go from there.
This is not the sexiest free agent class.
No, it isn't. But, you know, football – off-season or not, it's always exciting. I think it was last year that we had one of the craziest off-seasons.
It was trades. It wasn't even free agency. It was trades on free day.
We'll have the same thing again this year with all sorts of trades. But, you know, they always keep it interesting.
You've already seen this with the Kiko Alonso, Byron Maxwell trade that's looming out there on the flip to the Dolphins. Speaking of flips, I think it's going to be – not long before we see Steph Curry do like a cartwheel before making a basket. Any thoughts on this?
You know, Steph Curry is phenomenal. May go down as one of the greatest shooters of all time, if not the best. So he may go down as one of the greatest players of all time. I think he's the best player in the league currently, but we need to hold off on comparing him already to Michael Jordan or some of the other greats. I mean, this is going to be the first year, most likely, that he averages more than 24 points per game in a season. In his career, he's only averaging 22 points, and we're comparing him to the greatest player of all time, Michael Jordan. So let's pump the brakes on that. Let's wait till he does this consistently for maybe the next, say, 4 or 5 years before we have that conversation. But at the moment, this year, he is the best player in the league and fun to watch, and some of the things he does is just hard to believe and certainly very entertaining.
That's all I got for you. Unless you want to pick a winner of the NCAA tournament, which is going to be next to be impossible.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's wide open this year. I don't have a favorite. I will say Villanova is very overrated. That's my one thought.
Okay, there you go. That's Luke Morrow. This has been Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schoen. Luke, thank you, sir.
My pleasure as always.
We'll see you next week. This is the Road to the Final Four, Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schoen. Have a great night, everybody.